For some of you, I'm sure, 2011 was a difficult year. Maybe you're quite glad to get it over with. Maybe you're hoping to forget about it. And you're hoping that things will be better in 2012. On the other hand, maybe last year was a very good one for you. Maybe work or exams went well. Maybe your family life went well. And you're hoping it will all continue in 2012. And since this is New Year's Day, we might ask, does God have anything to say to us as we begin a new year? I believe that he does. Through the prophet Ezekiel, God wants to remind his people that he is our shepherd, and we are his sheep. That's not just a well-worn phrase. It's not just a sentimental idea that we use. It's a very powerful picture of the way God relates to his people. He's not a distant, uninterested God, just up there in the clouds. God is involved and at work among his people, just like a shepherd among his sheep. This morning we're going to look at Ezekiel chapter 34, which you'll find in page 865 in the Church Bible. And as you're turning there, let me remind you what we've seen already in this book as we've looked at it over the last few months. Ezekiel is an Israelite living in exile in Babylon, far, far from Israel. And he lives there with thousands of other exiles from Judah. That's the southern kingdom of Israel. In the first half of the book, we saw Ezekiel announced God's message that judgment was coming on Jerusalem. Now, the exiles were far away from Jerusalem, but they still looked to the city for their security. But through Ezekiel, God told them that was a false security. They ought to be turning to God. The city of Jerusalem was nothing by itself. The only genuine source of security is God himself. And because Israel refused to turn to him, Jerusalem was going to fall. And sure enough, back in chapter 24, Ezekiel learned that the king of Babylon had laid siege to Jerusalem. Then in chapter 33, Ezekiel says this, "In the 12th year of our exile, in the 10th month, on the 5th day, a man who had escaped from Jerusalem came to me and said, 'The city has fallen.'" God's promise of judgment has been fulfilled. Now, it has to be said that up to this point, the book of Ezekiel has not been lighthearted reading. Some of you have described it as scary. And we might expect that the news of Jerusalem's fall is going to be followed by even darker material, deeper depression and gloom. But actually, we find the opposite. Now that God's judgment has fallen, the mood of the book changes. The focus shifts onto hope for the future. Chapters 34 to the end set out a detailed picture of restoration and peace for God's people. The dark night of judgment has come. And now God begins to speak of a new day that's going to dawn. The fall of Jerusalem was the end of an era in God's plan, but it was not the end of his plan. And God's message of hope begins in chapter 34. We'll take the time to read the whole chapter. "The word of the Lord came to me, 'Son of man, prophesy against the shepherds of Israel. Prophesy and say to them, this is what the sovereign Lord says. Woe to the shepherds of Israel who only take care of themselves. Should not shepherds take care of the flock? You eat the curds, clothe yourselves with the wool, and slaughter the choice animals, but you do not take care of the flock. You have not strengthened the weak, or healed the sick, or bound up the injured. You have not brought back the strays, or searched for the lost. You have ruled them harshly and brutally. So they were scattered because there was no shepherd. And when they were scattered, they became food for all the wild animals. My sheep wandered all over all the mountains and on every high hill. They were scattered over the whole earth, and no one searched or looked for them. Therefore, you shepherds, hear the word of the Lord. As surely as I live, declares the sovereign Lord, because my flock lacks a shepherd, and so has been plundered and has become food for all the wild animals, and because my shepherds did not search for my flock, but cared for themselves rather than for my flock, therefore, O shepherds, hear the word of the Lord. This is what the sovereign Lord says. I am against the shepherds, and will hold them accountable for my flock. I will remove them from tending the flock, so that the shepherds can no longer feed themselves. And I will rescue my flock from their mouths, and it will no longer be food for them. For this is what the sovereign Lord says. I myself will search for my sheep and look after them. As a shepherd looks after his scattered flock when he is with them, so will I look after my sheep. I will rescue them from all the places where they were scattered on a day of clouds and darkness. I will bring them out from the nations and gather them from the countries, and I will bring them into their own land. I will pasture them on the mountains of Israel, in the ravines and in all the settlements in the land. I will tend them in a good pasture, and the mountain heights of Israel will be their grazing land. There they will lie down in good grazing land, and there they will feed in a rich pasture on the mountains of Israel. I myself will tend my sheep and make them lie down, declares the sovereign Lord. I will search for the lost and bring back the strays. I will bind up the injured and strengthen the weak. But the sleek and the strong I will destroy. I will shepherd the flock with justice. As for you, my flock, this is what the sovereign Lord says. I will judge between one sheep and another, and between rams and goats. Is it not enough for you to feed on the good pasture? Must you also trample the rest of your pasture with your feet? Is it not enough for you to drink clear water? Must you also muddy the rest with your feet? Must my flock feed in what you have trampled and drink what you have muddied with your feet? Therefore, this is what the sovereign Lord says to them. See, I myself will judge between the fat sheep and the lean sheep. Because you shove with flank and shoulder, butting all the weak sheep with your horns until you have driven them away, I will save my flock, and they will no longer be plundered. I will judge between one sheep and another. I will place over them one shepherd, my servant David, and he will tend them. He will tend them and be their shepherd. I, the Lord, will be their God, and my servant David will be prince among them. I, the Lord, have spoken. I will make a covenant of peace with them and rid the land of wild beasts, so that they may live in the desert and sleep in the forests in safety. I will bless them and the places surrounding my hill. I will send down showers in season. There will be showers of blessing. The trees of the field will yield their fruit, and the ground will yield its crops. The people will be secure in their land. They will know that I am the Lord, when I break the bars of their yoke and rescue them from the hands of those who enslaved them. They will no longer be plundered by the nations, nor will wild animals devour them. They will live in safety, and no one will make them afraid. I will provide for them a land renowned for its crops, and they will no longer be victims of famine in the land or bear the scorn of the nations. Then they will know that I, the Lord their God, am with them, and that they, the house of Israel, are my people, declares the Sovereign Lord. You, my sheep, the sheep of my pasture, are people, and I am your God, declares the Sovereign Lord. This is God's word. God's message in this chapter divides into three main sections. First, God claims his flock. Second, God promises to gather, tend, and protect his flock. And third, God promises a shepherd king whose rule will bring peace and blessing to his flock. First of all, in verses 1 to 10, God claims his flock. In verse 2, God says to Ezekiel, prophesy against the shepherds of Israel. Who does God have in mind? Who are the shepherds of Israel? They are the kings who have ruled Israel. The high point of Israel's kingship was the rule of David and then his son Solomon. But from then on, things went downhill. Israel divided into two kingdoms, north and south, and most of the kings were nasty pieces of work. There were occasional bright spots, but they were mainly a rotten bunch. And that's who God is talking about here. The line of kings that started after Solomon died and continued to Jehoiachin. He's the king of Judah who's now sitting in exile in Babylon. In Ezekiel's time, it was common to refer to the king as a shepherd. That wasn't just true in Israel. The Babylonians had a proverb which said, a people without a king is like sheep without a shepherd. The king of Egypt was known as the shepherd of Egypt. And it's not surprising that lots of nations used that comparison. The picture of a shepherd is very helpful to show how a king ought to rule. He ought to tend his people like a shepherd does his flock. But look again how God describes the actual rule of Israel's kings, picking up in the middle of verse 2. Woe to the shepherds of Israel who only take care of themselves. Should not shepherds take care of the flock? You eat the curds, clothe yourselves with the wool, and slaughter the choice animals, but you do not take care of the flock. You have not strengthened the weak, or healed the sick, or bound up the injured. You have not brought back the strays, or searched for the lost. You have ruled them harshly and brutally. So they were scattered because there was no shepherd. And when they were scattered, they became food for all the wild animals. My sheep wandered over all the mountains on every high hill. They were scattered over the whole earth, and no one searched or looked for them. Israel's kings were terrible shepherds. Curds were halfway between milk and cheese. Maybe our equivalent today would be clotted cream, something rich to eat. The point is that Israel's kings fattened themselves up at the expense of the flock. They took advantage of the flock. They left the flock to fend for themselves. And as a result, the sheep were weak, sick, injured, scattered, and eaten by wild animals. It's a picture of neglect. Physical and spiritual neglect. The kings had not cared for their people in either way. They hadn't fed them or led them in worshiping and honoring God. But look how God refers to these neglected sheep in verse 6. My sheep. That little phrase occurs 14 times in this chapter. Sometimes it's translated my sheep and sometimes my flock. But it's the same word in Hebrew. At first glance, we might think this chapter is all about the bad shepherds. But actually, God's focus is on the flock. Yes, God says, they've been neglected by their kings, but they're my flock. Yes, they've been scattered, they're in exile, but they're my flock. I have not forgotten them. I have not ceased to love them. And so the era of those kings has come to an end. In verse 10, God says, I am against the shepherds and will hold them accountable for my flock. I will remove them from tending the flock so that the shepherds can no longer feed themselves. I will rescue my flock from their mouths, and it will no longer be food for them. Yes, this is about judgment on Israel's kings, but it's also, and in fact, it's primarily a message of hope for the people of Israel. God says, I claim you. You're mine. I have not forgotten you. I care about you. I will not leave you to wander alone. Some of you need to hear this today. It's good for all of us as God's people to hear this, but maybe you particularly need to hear it. Maybe you've been feeling like an abandoned sheep on the hills, exposed to harsh weather and wild animals. Difficulties seem to be piling up for you. Maybe people have let you down. No one seems to notice. You feel like no one's looking out for you. You're wounded, maybe, and you just don't know where you fit in. God says, you're mine, my sheep. I have not forgotten. I have not stopped taking notice of you. I claim you. I will rescue you. This was a powerful message for the exiles to hear. And it's for God's flock today as well. Look what God goes on to say in verse 11. I myself will search for my sheep and look after them. As a shepherd looks after his scattered flock when he is with them, so will I look after my sheep. I will rescue them from all the places where they were scattered on a day of clouds and darkness. I will bring them out from the nations and gather them from the countries, and I will bring them into their own land. I will pasture them in the mountains of Israel, in the ravines and in all the settlements in the land. I will tend them in a good pasture, and the mountain heights of Israel will be their grazing land. There they will lie down in good grazing land, and there they will feed in a rich pasture in the mountains of Israel. I myself will tend my sheep and make them lie down, declares the Sovereign Lord. I will search for the lost and bring back the strays. I will bind up the injured and strengthen the weak. God promises to gather, tend, and protect his flock. God's people are scattered around in exile, not just in Babylon, but other places too. But he promises that he will gather them together in his place. They're hungry and wounded and vulnerable, but he promises to feed them and bind up their wounds and give them security. In fact, you may have noticed that what we have here is a mirror image of verses 3 to 6. God will do all the things the other shepherds have failed to do. He will take personal responsibility for his flock. He will care for them instead of taking advantage of them. And that includes saving his flock from internal threats. So far, God has spoken about wild animals and harsh conditions. Now he talks about other hostile sheep. Look again at verse 17. As for you, my flock, this is what the Sovereign Lord says. I will judge between one sheep and another, and between rams and goats. Is it not enough for you to feed on the good pasture? Must you also trample the rest of your pasture with your feet? Is it not enough for you to drink clear water? Must you also muddy the rest with your feet? Must my flock feed on what you have trampled and drink what you have muddied with your feet? Therefore, this is what the Sovereign Lord says to them. See, I myself will judge between the fat sheep and the lean sheep. Because you shove with flank and shoulder, butting all the weak sheep with your horns, until you have driven them away, I will save my flock, and they will no longer be plundered. I will judge between one sheep and another. It's true that God's flock need protection from external threats, but they need rescuing from internal threats too. The application for Israel here is that the people not only suffered from abuse of kings, some of the community leaders were abusing the people too. They were doing in miniature what the kings did on a big scale. They were getting fat at others' expense. They were serving themselves. They were bringing suffering on the rest of the flock. Those people, God says, are like sheep who eat their fill of grass, drink their fill of water, and then ruin what's left. They trample the pasture and muddy the water, so others miss out. They throw their weight around, shoving, butting, and plundering the other sheep. And God promises to deliver his true sheep from those false self-serving sheep. Whenever you and I hear the word shepherd, maybe we think of someone strolling leisurely through the grass, smoking a pipe as he strolls along. Maybe sitting down to write the odd poem under a tree, singing some songs to his sheep every so often. But commentators point out that in the ancient world, the shepherd needed a special combination of toughness and tenderness. He needed tenderness in dealing with the wounded, frightened sheep. But he needed toughness to deal with wild animals and other aggressive sheep. And that's exactly the picture God gives of himself here. Tender with the lost and the wounded. Tough with the self-serving and the oppressive. God will do what it takes to look after his flock. Again, there's a message here for those who've been abused or taken advantage of in various ways. Maybe by family members, maybe even by other professing Christians, maybe by church leaders. You've been shoved and butted around. Others have trampled your pasture and muddied your water. Here, God tells us that he sees, he knows, and he will put those things right. He won't just sweep them under the carpet. He will bring justice in his own time and in his own way. But as you and I look at these verses, we need also to examine ourselves. Unfortunately, some of the greatest damage to God's people is done by others in the church. Some of you have been on the receiving end. But we can't just stop there whenever we apply this passage. We must go on and ask ourselves, have I been guilty of this myself? Have I dug my horns into a brother or sister in the church? Have I wounded them with my words? Either by cutting them directly or gossiping to others about them? Have I been guilty of taking from the fellowship but never giving? Have others suffered because I wanted praise or position and I was willing to trample on others to get it? Is there someone sitting in this room nursing a wound that I gave them? God says, I see, I know, And verse 22, I will judge between one sheep and another. God the shepherd is tender with the lost and the wounded, and he is tough with the self-serving and the oppressive. So these are comforting words, and they may also come as a challenge for you and for me to repent. They may be challenging us today to ask forgiveness of the shepherd for harming his sheep. They may be challenging us to put things right with some other sheep. And if you need to do that, then do it today. Of course, we're all tempted to say, but he or she butted me first. That might be true. But we can still ask forgiveness for what we have done wrong. God has spoken about what he will do. Now he speaks about how he will do it and what it will look like. In verses 23 to 31, God promises a shepherd king whose rule will bring peace and blessing to his flock. Earlier, God announced that he would remove Israel's shepherds from tending the flock. Now look what he says in verse 23. I will place over them one shepherd, my servant David, and he will tend them. He will tend them and be their shepherd. I, the Lord, will be their God, and my servant David will be prince among them. God promises a new leader for his people. He will not be chosen by the people. He will be placed in his position by God. And God says he will lead not just part of God's people, like the kings of Judah had. This leader will lead all of God's people. There will be one shepherd. And he will be my servant David, God says. Now at this point in history, as Ezekiel is preaching, David has been dead for roughly 300 years. So what does God mean? Is he going to resurrect David? Or does he mean he's going to reinstate the line of kings that were descended from David? In fact, this is God's way of saying, I will be faithful to my promise to David. When David was on the throne, God made a promise about one of David's descendants. God said, I will establish the throne of his kingdom forever. And because this would be one of David's descendants, God also promised David, your throne will be established forever. So here in Ezekiel 34, God is not talking about a resurrected David, nor is he talking about a line of kings. He's talking about the one king he promised many years before. God has not forgotten his promise. He will provide the promised king, and he will not be like the other kings. He will be a true shepherd to God's people. God says he will tend them, and he will tend them on God's behalf. In verse 24, God says, I, the Lord, will be their God, and my servant David will be prince among them. Prince here means ruler. He will be one of them, he will be among them, but also their ruler. One writer says, God's solution to a history of bad shepherds is not to replace shepherding with a better system. No, God's solution is to replace the bad shepherds with a good shepherd. And if we ask who this good shepherd is, we don't find him in the Old Testament. But in the New Testament, we find Jesus, a descendant of David, announcing to the people, I am the good shepherd. We read that earlier in John chapter 10. And in that same chapter, we find him turning to the Jews and saying, I have other sheep that are not of this sheep pen. I must bring them also. They too will listen to my voice, and there shall be one flock and one shepherd." So Jesus not only claimed to be the one shepherd promised by Ezekiel, he also explained that God's flock contained more than just Jews. Yes, it's true, the first Christians came from the sheep pen of Israel. But Jesus came to gather God's sheep from every nation, tribe, people, and language. They're going to be united under the rule of the one shepherd king. So if God is talking about Jesus here, what are we to make of what follows in this chapter? What we find is a description of life under the rule of this shepherd king. Look at verse 25. "I will make a covenant of peace with them and rid the land of wild beasts so that they may live in the desert and sleep in the forests in safety. I will bless them and the places surrounding my hill. I will send down showers in season. There will be showers of blessing. The trees of the field will yield their fruit, and the ground will yield its crops. The people will be secure in their land. They will know that I am the Lord, when I break the bars of their yoke and rescue them from the hands of those who enslaved them. They will no longer be plundered by the nations, nor will wild animals devour them. They will live in safety, and no one will make them afraid." This is a picture of comprehensive peace, blessing, and security. It's a picture of wholeness and harmony and fulfillment. Men and women are at peace with their environment. They can live in the desert. They can sleep in the forest with no fear of wild animals. The ground is well watered. The harvests are rich. Men and women are at peace with each other. God says no one will make them afraid. And men and women are at peace with God. Look at verse 30. "Then they will know that I, the Lord their God, am with them, and that they, the house of Israel, are my people, declares the sovereign Lord. You, my sheep, the sheep of my pasture, are people, and I am your God, declares the sovereign Lord." A better translation of those final lines would be, "You are my sheep, human sheep of my pasture, and I am your God." But what about this picture that's painted in verses 25 to 31? We've said that Jesus is the shepherd king promised here, and Jesus has come. So where is this new day of peace and blessing and security? Has it come? Is it still in the future? Well, the answer the New Testament gives us is both. It has come and it is still to come. Theologians talk about it in terms of two levels of fulfillment, the already and the not yet. Jesus gives his people genuine peace and security today. He said to his disciples in Matthew 11, "Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light." Christians really are the flock under Jesus' care. We're not wandering alone through this life. When we come under the reign of the Good Shepherd, we experience peace with God. And we begin to experience peace with one another in God's family. We begin to experience healing from our wounds. God has provided under shepherds in the church to care for and feed his flock. Peter reminded church elders in the New Testament that they were to be shepherds of God's flock that is under your care. Notice the way Peter puts it. It's God's flock, not the elders' flock. But God has placed it under the care of elders. Church leaders are to be channels of God's care to his flock. Now, we'll always do that imperfectly, but we are to be devoted to doing it the best we can. We are to be devoted to growing ourselves so we can be better channels of God's care. And all of this is to say that in Jesus, we have genuine peace, blessing, and security. He cares for us and provides for us. Often he does that through other Christians. We can turn our worries and anxiety over to him. After he speaks about elders, Peter goes on to talk about the chief shepherd, Jesus. Peter says, "Cast all your anxiety on him, because he cares for you." So today, we can have a deep experience of peace. We can rest in God's care. And yet, we know, don't we, that there's even more to come. Because today, our relationships are not perfect. Church leaders and church members are not perfect. Our physical and spiritual wounds don't always heal perfectly. We carry scars with us. Outside and inside us, we have scars. And the creation around us is still groaning. We're not yet at peace with this world we live in. And so Revelation, the last book of the Bible, points us to a future day for God's people. Revelation tells us that when that day comes, never again will they hunger. Never again will they thirst. The sun will not beat upon them, nor any scorching heat. For the Lamb at the center of the throne will be their shepherd. He will lead them to springs of living water, and God will wipe away every tear from their eyes. Jesus is our shepherd today as we live in this world that's broken. And one day he will return to shepherd us in a perfect world, the new heaven and earth. Ezekiel 34 was first preached to people whose source of security had been taken away. Jerusalem had fallen. And so for better or worse, those people stood at the beginning of a new era. And today you and I stand at the beginning of a new year. We may be approaching it with trepidation or with excitement. But to all of us, God says, "Look to me for your security. You are my flock. I will shepherd you. I will tend you and provide for you. I will bind up your wounds and I will give you strength." And God says, "I will lead you finally into a future of perfect peace and blessing. I will bring you safe to your eternal home." We're going to close our service with two songs that point us to the perfect care of our Shepherd King. First of all "All the Way, My Savior